People think that mindfulness is all about resting and relaxing. Now, of course, it can induce a blissful state. However, it's really about increasing that awareness through the practice. So actually, many mindfulness meditations or paying attention on purpose to in the present moment can be quite challenging. And that's fine, because then we're able to cultivate some attitudes around that that are really constructive for us in our leadership style, in our engagement.
Hey everyone, this is Ben Morton and welcome to episode 30 of the show and my conversation with another good friend and colleague of mine, Calvin Niles. Calvin is a communication coach known as the Mindful Storyteller, who is dedicated to making a positive impact on the lives of leaders, entrepreneurs, coaches, and wider society through his services and products. Through his experience in public speaking, coaching and business, he works with individuals to empower them to be more authentic and impactful in their communication. Calvin has worked with hundreds of people and countless senior leaders in large corporates all the way down to SMEs and from solopreneurs to charitable organisations. I know you're absolutely going to love this episode and what Calvin has to share. So without any further delay, let's dive straight into this conversation with my good friend and colleague, Calvin Niles. Calvin, welcome to the show. I'm delighted to have you on today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation. But first of all, how are you doing, my friend?
Very well, very well, very well. Glad to be here with you, Ben.
Awesome. And tell me, whereabouts in the world are you, Calvin? Because it's a little different to most people have on the show. Tell us where you are, what you can see, and what the temperature's like.
Wow. Well, I am in the sunny island of Barbados, and I've managed to escape from the lockdown in the UK because I've had to come and care for my father. And it's beautiful outside, the sun is shining, and it is just below 30 degrees. So I have very little to complain about.
Amazing stuff. Calvin, the first question I always ask every guest who comes on the show is, can you kick off, please, by just telling us a little bit about what it is that you are doing at the moment? And if you will, a little bit about the journey or the backstory that got you there, if you will.
So, yeah, right now I am a communication coach, also known as the Mindful Storyteller. I help people to communicate with clarity, confidence, impact, authenticity in their business and their life. Especially love working with socially conscious business entrepreneurs and people who want to have a positive impact on their society. One of the best areas of work and most enjoyable, shall I say, areas of work is helping people to tell their own stories, helping people to get to the essence of their story and share that with the world. So that's what I do now. I've been doing that for about 7 years or so, having transitioned from 12 years in a corporate job. How I sort of left the corporate job was, I guess, some things you've come across a lot, Ben, which was disillusionment. You know,
right? Yeah.
I've been doing various roles from in the transport sector, from operations management to commercial management to innovation management. And that was where actually I started to do leadership development workshops, specifically innovation in leadership. That was my area. But there was a lot of workshop facilitation, a lot of conversation starting, ice breaking, and really trying to get that group mind to come up with, I guess, the essence of what the meeting was about, whether that's to create a new initiative or to solve a problem on a project or anything like that, really. And it's, I would say it's been probably a winding road to get to where I got to. Because, of course, you have to get those trials, those challenges. You've got to hit those existential personal questions as well, I suppose, of, well, what is this all about? What am I doing? And why am I doing this? So that happened for me, I would say, within the last decade. And then it took me some time to focus and channel my energy towards the work that I'm doing now, which organically started as storytelling in business. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
I think it's interesting you say it's been a winding road, right? There's so many metaphors, I think, around that. And you see the posts on social media and LinkedIn quite a lot, don't you? Whereas sort of it's a straight line between point A and point B, where it says what most people think success looks like. And then next to it is like, this is what it really looks like. And it's just like a horrible squiggly like mess. But I think that's the reality for so many people, whether you're doing what you and I do, kind of running your own business, your own small business, or whether you're a CEO of a big FTSE 100 organization, it's very rarely a linear line or journey that gets you there. And I think the winding journeys are the more interesting ones, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, wouldn't it be boring if we didn't have problems to solve?
Yeah, it would. We often wish for it, but it would be pretty boring. You're right.
Yeah, life would be boring. And that's the first thing I say to people when they come, oh my God, I'm so stressed. Oh, I've got this major problem. I say, congratulations. What do you mean? I know that's a bit of a showstopper in itself. Eh? What do you mean, congratulations? Well, wouldn't your life be boring if you didn't have any problems?
I think it's more of a conversation starter than a showstopper. I bet that leads to some fascinating conversations.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, so I think you're right when you say, you know, those challenges, that winding road, those how do we get back on the path? You know, how do we move forward in a way that's more constructive for us and the people that we're working with? How do we get to that place, but also enjoy getting to that place at the same time? That's really, I think, where the value is for people. It doesn't matter what job they're doing. It doesn't matter what level of responsibility they have. You could just be running your own business as a solopreneur, or, you know, you could be the leader of an entire army. Yeah. No pun intended, Ben.
I never made it to those lofty heights. That's a great segue in. That wasn't entirely planned, though. But this whole concept of the winding, meandering journey that we're exploring here, Calvin, it is interesting, because I think certainly for many leaders, they can often, with their people, the teams they're leading, fall into the trap perhaps of just sharing, I guess, that the highlight reel of their career journey that got them to where they are. And certainly social media, a lot of the time, is people definitely showing the highlight reel, right? But in your mind, and with the work you do around sort of storytelling, like why do you think it is so important for anybody really, but particularly leaders, to really authentically share their authentic story and journey and just demonstrate their authenticity? Why is that so important?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think that when it comes to telling your story, and this is where the mindful component comes in, really, because the first thing I'd like to say is we are always telling a story all the time. It doesn't matter if we are aware of it or not. My job is to help people become aware of the stories that they are telling, both to themselves and to the world. Whether that's people in their immediate life, whether that's people in their teams, in their professional life. But what story are you telling yourself? What story are you telling others? And then how can you construct a new story, if that's what you need, to one that is more constructive, more impactful, as you say, more authentic? So this is where the mindful storytelling arises. I started out with the storytelling, and that was very much rooted in, I think, how people interpreted that originally was, you know, the selling side, and storytelling for selling is really so important in business and in marketing and getting your message out there. It cannot be overstated how important that is. But I wanted to close the loop and say, well, yeah, great, let's help you sell, but let's take a couple of steps back first and figure out what story you're telling yourself. And how can you use that knowledge and that awareness, hence the term mindful storytelling, to construct a more powerful story. I like to summarize it as be well, then sell, you know? So the storytelling for leaders then is a really powerful way to connect with your people, connect with your teams, to inspire action. That's another powerful way of being able to tell your stories. They are influential. They help you to build influence and even transcend some of these barriers that people seem to have. You know, we're in a time now where the news amplifies so much difference, but we don't see much of the news, at least the mainstream news, celebrating the unifying factors that we have. And stories have the ability to do that for us. You know, think of all the things that we do when we want that in our lives. We might retreat to what people call escapism, maybe a film, Netflix, dramas. what was that really fascinating one? Bridgerton, was it on Netflix? It's this sort of royal, historical, fictional story, which is so inclusive and touches all of the nerves of people in their everyday lives. And it brought huge audiences together to coalesce around this story. So stories are there for us in every part of our lives, whether we are aware of it or not. And I want to help people to see that if we use them consciously, if we use them with some intentionality, and the intention is constructive, of course, then that can help us to transcend some of these barriers and build resilience as well in our own lives.
Calvin, that's incredible. I've just had one of those real moments where, you know, where you've heard something many times before, but there comes a moment where you suddenly hear it very, very differently, and it cuts through. And like we've known each other for 4 or 5 years, right? And kind of had caught up and had lots of conversations like this. But the piece you just said right at the start of that answer is that we are all telling ourselves stories all of the time, or words to that effect. It just really kind of resonated with me all of a sudden, because we are telling each other ourselves stories all the time, right? Nearly everything that goes on in our head, really, if you get quite deep, is made up. It's an interpretation. So it starts to become, I guess, around, are we telling ourselves useful and helpful stories? And I guess this is the link with mindfulness, which I'll let you talk about in a minute, but being mindful and conscious of the stories that we are telling ourselves, just like we can be mindful of how we walk and really notice what's around us and our footsteps, or we can eat more mindfully and really slow down and savor the food and taste it. It's about, if I'm understanding you right, suddenly being really conscious and aware of the stories that we're telling ourselves and others.
100%, yeah, on the money. And that's the such a magic about it. I mean, for me, stories still have this mysterious quality where you just, you know, we know more about stories with science. So there's a whole kind of artistic realm of stories and a strand of development around the artistic merit of them. And then there is the, you know, social impact and getting the message out there. You know, let's look at the politicians when they come to their conferences or their leadership elections. You know, they won't hit you with, you know, complex policy that civil servants have drawn up for them. I mean, they'll just start by saying, let me tell you a story about John. John wakes up in the morning and then off they will go and tell you about John's life. There's a reason why they do that. So politicians are using stories. We know that we are using them and consuming them for entertainment. We know they can be used for social impact. So, the science is really, especially the neuroscience, is really showing how stories activate parts of our brains that really you would not be able to determine. For example, looking at a person's brain when they're watching or hearing a story, the difference between somebody experiencing the event themselves directly. Yeah. The brain activates in an identical way. And so this is what really helped to enhance the way we remember things in the form of story, because our emotional centers are and the parts of our brain which recognize and process these feelings are supercharging our memory. They're giving us dopamine hits and they're helping us to remember. So stories are also helping people to remember things. I mean, think of a time back in your life where I say, oh, what were you doing in 1988 at 2 p.m. On Friday afternoon in the middle of May? you probably, I would say, I'm hazarding a guess here, Ben, wouldn't remember.
No, there's a fair chance I was playing with some sort of Action Man toy or setting a booby trap in the garden for my mum, but no, not really got a clue.
Right, or rappelling down your windows, yes.
Yeah, but you've read the book, right?
I've read the book, absolutely. But yeah, so if it wasn't something that you could really place, but if I said to you, can you remember that time when you felt so happy to see your parents, or you remember when you felt the most love you've ever felt in your life? And then straight away, you can probably think back to a couple of times where immediately come to mind. So we are perceiving the world through the lens of this narrative, and this description of events of the past are really a narrative of a story, and that could be the story of our lives. It could be the story of a single event. It could be the story of our lives. The awareness part comes from being able to see, well, hang on a minute. As you mentioned earlier, as an interpretation, this is the thing about perspective that, you know, that you're mentioning just now.
Yeah.
That we have a perspective, and that perspective can change. I mean, think of the amount of times that our perspectives have changed, or I suppose even intentionally, let's say a leader wants to change somebody's perspective, then a story becomes a really powerful mechanism to deliver that, because that can help to change perspectives. The events themselves, they don't change. They're facts. You know, if a building blows up, the building blew up. But 100 people will have a totally different story depending on their angle of perspective, depending on how their narrative describes those events. So the mindfulness helps people to zoom out. In my life, for example, you know, if I was so caught up in my own narrative and my own head noise, without the mindfulness practice, I would not have been able to zoom out and step back to the degree of objectivity to witness my own thoughts, to witness my own narrative and say, ah, the narrative of the story I'm telling is X. Now I see that. I want to change it now to Y. And that's where I can now rebuild something that's more constructive, more powerful, as you say, to make a bigger and better impact.
Yeah, Calvin, I'd love to just jump in on that mindfulness piece for a few minutes if we can, because it's something that you've mentioned, we've mentioned a lot so far. And I think it's also something that is really being spoken about a lot now, probably over the past 5 years. And maybe that's because a lot of the neuroscience, the brain research is starting to back up what sort of maybe the old societies, traditions, mystics, spiritualism have told us. But we're starting to see a lot of hard scientific benefits. And I know you're also a sort of expert in that area and a mindfulness teacher. But for those people who are maybe still a bit sort of skeptical, cynical about it, can you just talk to us like a little bit about like, what is mindfulness? Kind of what isn't it? And sort of dispel some of the myths. Like, for example, it doesn't mean you have to sit cross-legged in a lotus pose for 20 yeah. minutes with some incense sticks burning, does it? I mean, you might want to. It helps. It makes it more enjoyable. But it's not what it's all about necessarily, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of misconceptions about that. And I think, thankfully, with, like you say, the plethora of apps and information out there about mindfulness has become quite ubiquitous. But still, you know, a lot of the resistance around it is because there are certain perspectives, or, you know, there is a story of people are telling themselves about it.
Yeah, back to storytelling, right?
It's about the storytelling. And I think in the simplest way, so in Western secular mindfulness, this is the mindfulness that your doctor could prescribe you, for example, if you were suffering from anxiety or high degrees of stress and things. Your GP could actually prescribe you mindfulness now.
Right.
This would be described as the awareness that arises, and this is according to Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's been leading Western secular mindfulness in the medical environment since the 70s.
Yeah.
He would describe it as the awareness that arises in the present moment when paying attention intentionally, on purpose, and non-judgmentally. So I would simplify that just for the purposes of this discussion to just say to focus on the word awareness, because he says the awareness that arises. So the awareness that happens, we start to become aware of things when we are mindful. That's really what mindfulness is about. If we're mindless, we are not aware, you know. So you might hear people using the word mindless in other contexts. Oh, mindless violence, you know, and that kind of thing. So mindful is an awareness that arises. And the intentionality of tuning into the present moment then is where the awareness arises itself. So there are other ways to grow in awareness, of course, through intellectual discussions that we will have around concepts quite a lot. And that can help to shine a light on areas we maybe haven't seen. But people can do mindfulness in the simplest ways. And some of the myths around them, for example, people think that mindfulness is all about resting and relaxing. Now, of course, it can induce a blissful state, or it can induce a state of relaxation. However, it's really about increasing that awareness through the practice. So actually, many mindfulness meditations or paying attention on purpose to in the present moment can be quite challenging for people. And that's fine, because then we're able to cultivate some attitudes around that that are really constructive for us in our leadership style, in our engagement. So let's say a practical example. Imagine that, I don't know, I have a team of 100 people and everybody wants my attention. Now, this happens a lot for directors. I mean, it was the case for my own director when I was in corporate life. We had just gone through a big organizational change. People were feeling insecure about their jobs, uncertain about the future. The director did not have all the answers yet, of course, because he's also trying to lead the change with the board. And then he feels levels of anxiety encroaching upon him. But he also, by the way, starts to be very impatient, right, with people. He doesn't have much time. He can't give you his attention properly. When you're in the room, he's on an email. He's doing multiple things at once. Mindfulness can help us to strengthen such things like our patience. And being able to slow down by observing the present moment through sensory awareness helps us to restore a natural calm that the body wants to go back to. You know, science calls this homeostasis. You know, the body wants to go back to a natural resting rhythm, a natural resting place. We want to be out of the fight or flight mechanism, which so many of us in the Western world are dominated by, because the amygdala doesn't recognize the difference between an imagined threat and an actual threat. The body response is the same. So if we're able to get ourselves out of that loop through that kind of practice, we are able to cultivate patience. We're able to be much more patient with our people. We're able to listen better. We're able to understand because we have a more detached perspective. You know, you're no longer annoying me now because you're taking up my time. I'm actually going to listen to you as a human being. And these are some of the benefits that come, that arise from the practice of mindfulness, which have nothing to do with sitting in lotus for half an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
As fun as that might be for some people. I mean, I personally enjoy those kinds of experiences. But also you can have mindfulness in 2 minutes of just being aware of your breath in a micro moment.
Yeah, and again, Calvin, the thing that you said that is really resonating with me is this awareness word. So I've been practicing developing a mindfulness habit probably over the past 5 years now, kind of on and off, generally doing okay. I tend to do very well at it kind of during the week, Monday to Friday, because it fits with my sort of other habits and routines. The weekends, it's consistently been harder for me, and I've not nailed it in terms of a deliberate 10-15 minute mindfulness practice. But again, to your point around storytelling, for a long time, I mean like 2.5-3 years, maybe even longer, the story I told myself was, if my mindfulness practice is going well, I'll manage sort of 10 minutes in a sort of calm, focused, clear state of mind, and I'll come out of it kind of feeling very calm, heading towards Zen-like. And if it's gone really well, I've had some sort of like insight about the past, present, or future. In other words, that was the goal I was striving for in mindfulness, which is probably entirely the opposite goal or thing to get from it. I suddenly realized actually the days when I sit and do my mindfulness practice and can only kind of sort of count three breaths before I realize my mind's wandering, and that keeps happening for 10, 15 minutes, they're probably my most valuable days of mindfulness practice, because in those moments, I suddenly have the awareness that my mind's really busy and it's racing, and that's going to be affecting kind of me at work. It's going to be affecting what I'm like with colleagues, team members, customers, with my daughter, with my wife. And whilst I can't always necessarily change it, I do think just realizing that my mind is busy and racing is really helpful. So they are probably the best days practice I have.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what's the best way to frame that? When if you're someone who's probably thinking, wow, you know, I'm not feeling zen today, I'm not feeling awesome today, I would say think of that as going into the gym. And let's say you're doing some resistance work on, you know, like a machine or something. If you're feeling totally zen on a day of mindfulness meditation, that's great. And then you feel awesome and you don't really feel anything can perturb you on that day. You just feel completely centered and controlled. Great. Ride that wave while it's there. Yeah. When the day comes where it's challenging and you can't focus your mind and there's millions of thoughts and you feel your energy is spread all over the place and all that, and then you take the opportunity to just sit and take three conscious mindful breaths to be aware of that, and you say as a noticing, that's equivalent to increasing the resistance on your machine. You're really now getting stronger. You're nice. Strengthening the muscle and your ability to come back to the present moment. And that's really what the opportunity that lies in those challenging moments is. So that's why it's not always bliss and it's not always super calming and relaxing. Because imagine this loop that happens. Wow, I woke up 1 hour late today. I didn't do my miracle morning routine. This is so annoying. My day is going to be terrible. Okay, I'm starting to feel stressed already. The kids are going to be late for school and I have to get to work to a meeting, which is going to take 3 hours. And I hate 3 hour meetings. When am I ever going to get work done?
Yeah. Right?
Oh, these bloody meetings. So now all of a sudden I'm already feeling stressed. The body is starting to go through that fight or flight response. You know, the adrenaline is going, the cortisol is going. It's just a complete hijack. If I were to stop and take three conscious deep breaths and tune into the present moment, I may then have an opportunity to be aware, oh, I've got this narrative running in my head that I'm actually going to have a terrible day today. I'm actually aware of this incessant thought loop that almost took control of me. I wasn't even really aware of it until now. Now that's like a moment of noticing. And then once that noticing is there, you now have an opportunity to say, I've noticed that. I now have a choice to come back to the present moment just by being aware of my breath or tuning into my senses. And this literally can take a micro moment when you're super busy to just take three conscious breaths. In mindfulness, there's actually something called a 3-minute breathing space designed specifically for these moments where you can't go and sit down for half an hour to just zen out, but you need to take three conscious moments or a 3-minute breathing space to allow yourself to step out of this loop. And once that happens, you're getting stronger already. You're cultivating the ability to come back to the present every time. And then that's where the clarity comes from.
Yeah, amazing. Calvin, I'm conscious of your time. I just want to loop back and ask you something else around the mindful storytelling piece in particular. And this is really a question to help those people listening who are much more of a pragmatist. So anybody sitting there who was sitting there listening going, oh yeah, this sounds amazing. I get where Calvin's going with this, but what does it actually look like? What does he actually do? How's he going to help me? Can you just give us a bit of an overview of sort of how you typically work with individuals to help them with this kind of authentic storytelling piece? What does it look like if someone works with you?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking. So typically, of course, you know, mindful storytelling would invariably touch on the story quite principally. But before we even get there, I like to encourage people to step back. So let's imagine I was working with somebody one-on-one who is highly stressed, top of their game, but just not feeling like they're where they're meant to be in their life. Something just feels like it's missing. Then chances are there's some incongruency or inauthenticity there, and they're not quite sure what it is. So I would help them to actually rewrite their story. And telling your signature story and creating that starts actually in the foundation. You know, when you're baking a cake, you know, we come into the shop, we see a fantastic cake that's all iced up and it just looks amazing. But actually, we have to bake the cake first. We got to get the right ingredients. We got to get, you know, what's the right flour that we want to use and so on. We need to be able to really appraise that. So I like to step back and I start from a position of space. And this is where the application of the mindful principles come in. So we can step back and try to cultivate the observer side of ourselves to see. And from there, I will work with you to then start to think about, okay, what is it you really want to say? What is your message? What is it you as a human being, as an individual, what is it you stand for? What's your essence message? This is where the authenticity comes from. This is really where the seat of your truth. And once you're clear on that, I then work with you to translate that key message, or translate that what I call essence message rather, into a key message that is right for the audience you're communicating with. Then we start to think about the stories. Then we start to say, okay, so now we see the message. We've created the distance at the beginning to get perspective on some of the stories you're telling. We can let go the ones that are unhelpful. We can keep the ones that are helpful, and we can do some reframing and perspective shifting if needed. And then we'll move into crafting a key message that starts with your essence message. And then we move into delivering that story for the right audience. We'll create I like to call a story library, where all the stories that are helpful to really get your message across, we will work together to fill that library up. So, you know, I always say to people, the story really is the vehicle rather of your key message. And we've got to start at the message. And that's on an individual level. But of course, teams can use storytelling workshops that I deliver as well, which is all about what I call mindful storytelling for well-being and resilience. And this is about creating the hero's journey and applying practical mindfulness principles to your hero's journey's story that you're creating. And that's more of a workshop-based group work kind of approach, where people actually write stories. They write stories of a hero using a real challenge that they're aware of that may exist in their life or present in somebody's life that is around them, but something very tangible and practical. And then we start to teach them how to use mindfulness tools and principles and embed that in the hero's journey as the hero transforms. So that's another way of doing it. And then, of course, there is the selling piece, which is, how can I say it well? How can I really resonate with my audience? And this is all about the impact at the end. And that's the icing on the cake. So there are a number of approaches. One is a one-on-one kind of very personal way of working with you to get your true message out of you and get it into the world in a way that your audience understands, and using the vehicle of the story to carry that in a very mindful way. And then the other one is, how can you build resilience and wellness in your teams? How can we use the story narrative? And a lot of these approaches that we see, as I mentioned, in Hollywood of the hero's journey, to write ourselves a new story. Because remember, all people see the world through lens of story. So we're using something that's innate already in our human existence to our advantage by applying the mindfulness principles to them to have that clarity, whether it's clarity on what we want to say or clarity of expression for the audience, to have that authenticity. It is true. What I'm saying is true for me, and it is coming from my seat of truth, my essence message. And that authenticity and impact is then delivered at the end, which is how to get that story across in a way that's right for the people you're communicating with. So that's how the mindful storytelling sort of ecosystem works. Depends on the individual or the scenario that I'm working in.
Sounds amazing, Calvin. I'm not sure I've shared this with you before, actually. I won't say who it is to protect their identity. I'm sure they wouldn't mind, but there's somebody we both know who I'd known for probably 3 years. And then I know you did some work with them. And as a result, I was watching part of an online program they'd created, which they started off telling their story. And I'd never heard that person tell that story before. And I remember sitting listening to it and just sitting going, wow, and suddenly feeling really connected to the person, and the quite personal story they had told just sort of took their credibility to a whole nother level. But I already held them in high regard in terms of their credibility. But I can really vouch for the work that you do, my friend.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Ben. Thank you for sharing. I didn't even know you saw that. And this is the thing, you know, we have, I call them story gems. So we all have these story gems, and you know, you talked about the highlight reel and all that stuff at the beginning, you know, the social media and how we have a certain image that we present. But actually, there are a lot of parts of our story that we don't share that is very important to really connecting with people and illustrating that we understand. I mean, this is the principal reason, right? I understand you as a human being. I understand your challenge right now. And I'm going to demonstrate that by telling you what I've been through. So that's one way of using the story for that reason. But also remember that that's because that's the way we naturally interpret the world. You know, if I say to you, tell me what the dust on Mars tastes like, you would just have no answer. You say, well, I imagine it tastes like, maybe it tastes like the dust on Earth. I don't know. But you wouldn't know. So there's no contextual experiential reference. But when we tell a story, there is a contextual experiential reference. It is our emotional experience as a human being. So if I tell you something that I've been through, and I share my experience in an authentic way, you will intuitively understand it because you've tasted that experience already at some part of your life in some way or the other. And this is what I mean by how we contextualize and interpret the world. So it's important that we step out from behind some of our apprehensions, especially if it is in the realm of service. If we want to be service to our teams, to the people that we serve, to our clients, to our communities, to our loved ones, then we have to be ourselves. We have to show our experiences and demonstrate that in the best way that gives us the best chance. And I, of course, I feel that mindful storytelling is one big key to that. So I call this the paradox of vulnerability, because the more vulnerable we feel that we are going to be, the less vulnerable we actually are.
Yeah.
It's quite paradoxical. Vulnerability, in the dictionary sense of open to being hurt or harmed, is actually reduced by our propensity and potential to be vulnerable anyway, because just taking that step means we're in a stronger place already.
Calvin, we could keep on chatting for ages. I'm sure. I'm very conscious. I know you've got a call with a client, I think, coming up very soon. If people want to connect with you, find out more about what you do one-on-one with teams or some of your online programs, where can people go? How can they connect with you?
www.calvinniles.com. That's always the easiest, fastest, and best way to find me. All of my work is on there, and that's the best way to connect with me as well. Really enjoyed speaking to you, Ben. Appreciate that. And yeah, we definitely should take this conversation perhaps over a pint or two back in England when I return.
That sounds amazing. And sending lots of positive vibes to you and your father, my friend.
Thanks, Ben.
Take care. Speak to you soon.
So there you have it, folks. I really hope that you found that conversation valuable, but more importantly, perhaps, I hope that you're able to make some small positive changes as a result of what Calvin shared. If you did get value from the episode, then please do rate, review, and subscribe via iTunes, as it really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more episodes of the show. Do also swing by ben-morton.com where you can connect with me, find out more about my leadership mentoring work, how I work with teams, and details of my various online programs via the tools and resources page. That's it for this episode. See you again soon, and lead on, folks.